from education to employment and everything in between. It's a clearinghouse for all things shale. It's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier. And I am back in Pennsylvania this week, but only for a short time. I was in Florida last week, beautiful, sunny, and I know our own DC Taylor is going to be heading that way here soon.
Yeah, as
he's getting ready to take a few days in the sun. But now I'm back in the cold, rainy, wet Northeast PA. But luckily, it's only for a few hours because I turn around and fly right back out to New Mexico and Texas. But what about yourself? You're leaving here, leaving for a couple of days, right, DZ?
Yes, Bill. Good morning. Yes. So you're bouncing all over the country. I'm bouncing from here to 1,000 miles south, and so I go see my my girlfriend in down in Florida twice a year, and so gonna go take a little road trip.
Well, we were just chatting before the show started. I had this interesting situation. Because we booked our flight, I guess, far enough out, we were able to secure the exact same seats on all four legs of our flight, two down, two back. We flew to Charlotte and then into Melbourne, Florida.
Yeah.
And it was the exact same plane, both, you know, both ways. So that was kind of neat. And then, but on the way down, as you and I were joking, I didn't have anyone seated next to me. So it was like I was in first class and I had elbow room and I could lean over and had plenty of room. And then on the flight back, my luck ran out. The first leg of the flight back wasn't so bad. Nice lady. She was there. She didn't take up much elbow room like I did. So I was able to use the armrest, the middle one and the side one.
Yeah.
And then my luck really ran out on the flight home. The last person to get on the plane, larger gentleman, and you know, and many people who know me, I'm also a larger gentleman. So let's just say we were like busting at the seams out of our seat. I spent the entire flight leaning to my right over to the aisle where I routinely was hit by the lady walking by with the cart.
Oh, jeez. Poor fella.
So I'm not really looking forward to my turnaround and having to do that all again. Hopefully my luck holds true and nobody's sitting on top of me on the flights.
Yeah, start buying like three. If it's the three-seater thing, buy three of those things and you get the whole row to yourself.
You can lay across it. Actually, fun story. I doubt my brother-in-law or cousin-in-law listens to this. He's a night shifter. But he was telling us about how he and his – at the time it was his fiance – went to Australia, and I want to say that he didn't realize it was like 20 hours of travel.
Yeah.
And when he realized they only booked coach seats in the back, he runs up to the desk and he's like, "Oh, can I upgrade to first class?" And they're like, "No, it's a full flight." And he's like, "Well, is there anything we can do?" And the guy was like, "Well, there's like a row of five seats I could sell you." And I guess he ended up buying the whole row of five seats so he could lay across it on the flight down.
All right.
Yeah, I guess when you're in a situation like that. But
yeah.
Well, it is nice to be back, and it is nice to be on the Shale Gas News kick here and bringing folks the energy topics that they need. I guess when I was away, I forgot to ask before we started the show, when I was away, I missed that little bit of winter weather that we had. What was that like, DC?
Winter weather. Let's see. It wasn't significant, at least not where I've been. You know, mostly I'm mostly here in the Wyoming Valley or up here on West Mountain in Scranton. I
heard everything from a little bit of sleet and snow to some ice, and then it was all gone like 24 hours later, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. It was, you know, it was not a huge thing, at least, you know, say parts of the area where I've been. It was fine. Yeah, you know, there was some scraping going on, scraping it off the car. But other than that, it was okay.
Well, I was curious to ask too, because for those who don't know, but we've discussed on the show, DC's headquarters is on top of the mountain.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's dangerous to traverse in the winter weather.
Yeah, no, it's the hill was fine. We affectionately refer to it as the hill or the mountain.
The hill. Well, that's good to hear. And of course, I think I was sitting poolside when all that was going on. So, all right, couple of news stories. Three questions answered on the Ukraine's war impact on energy, according to E&E News. Before Russia invaded Ukraine, plans to cut carbon emission were everywhere. President Joe Biden had just taken office in 2021, saying that he wanted to decarbonize the U.S. electric grid within 15 years. And at the COP26 climate summit in Scotland, countries pledged to cut fossil fuel use and roll back oil and gas subsidies. And if I recall, at that summit, all of the world leaders who made those pledges also flew private jets and planes to get there.
Right.
Then on February 24th, 2022, bombs fell in Ukraine as invading troops swept into Eastern European country. Rather than facing just the dilemma of how to manage a pending shift to cleaner fuel sources to help stave off the worst impacts of climate change, major nations face two more immediate pressing issues: energy security and sky high prices. And then we saw an immediate push to, I don't want to say recarbonize, but readdress the dynamics of the world's energy markets. We saw at the same time as Russia's threats and eventual follow through on threats to curtail natural gas supplies to Europe, there was a war, if you will, on oil. And oil and energy being produced from Russia, embargoes and price controls and all sorts of what do they call them when they block other countries from buying or selling the products?
Sanctions.
They were all imposed, and we saw a dramatic shift in energy prices where gas, natural gas, gasoline, everything skyrocketed. And then the world shifted. Countries like the United States moved its LNG and energy production to Europe, where it's traditionally been going to Asia or in Asian markets, other markets around the world. So now the interesting thing is, where do we go from here? If nothing else, this war, which still continues to go on, and hopefully it comes to an end soon, has demonstrated that even with the best of intentions to decarbonize, the push to just go to green energy overnight or within a few years doesn't make sense. Again, we've said this on the show many times. We need more fossil fuels. The population of the world continues to grow. The demands of energy continue to grow. So we cannot just assume solar, wind, hydro, and other green energy sources are going to be there 100% tomorrow. And I don't even think they'll be there in 10 or 15 years. Not saying we shouldn't invest in them, of course. But I think this demonstrates why we should be investing more in oil and natural gas production here in the United States and the capacities to export that. Why energy bills skyrocketed in the U.S. West. E&E News also reports that politicians across the U.S. are vowing to take action after high home heating and electricity bills left some consumers paying triple their normal amounts this winter. Surging prices afforded politicians like Colorado Governor Jared Polis a chance to tout his state's move away from natural gas, while California Governor Gavin Newsom called on federal regulators to investigate market manipulation. State lawmakers have warned utilities that they could face more scrutiny if prices remain high, with the Colorado General Assembly even setting up a special joint committee to investigate utility rates. Market analysts say utility prices are expected to come down soon, but not because of anything politicians did. Instead, high natural gas prices compounded by storage constraints and pipeline troubles are dropping from their winter peaks, removing the biggest cause of rising bills. I'm glad the story highlights that. A lot of these problems could be solved by more infrastructure. The infrastructure we currently are using in most of this country was built for populations in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And now we just assume because the lights turn on and because we have gas in our stoves or our heating systems that, oh, everything's fine. Let's, you know, move on from that. And the reality is sometimes these utility systems are barely putting everything together. You know, behind the scenes, they're not. People aren't appreciating that when we have severe winter weather events, especially in cold, cold winters or hot, hot summers, that how close we come to sometimes seeing brownouts or blackouts. I think California, it's becoming more regularly, especially over the summer, where they get warned of rolling blackouts to try and balance the electrical grid. So again, the solution to that is build more infrastructure, make the energy more available. I also think it's an opportunity to reevaluate the competition side of it. You know, one of the things in this country, utility events or utilities are given certain protections. They don't necessarily have to compete against each other because they have franchises. The franchises basically say, hey, you know, you have to serve the public in the best possible way. And because of that, you don't have to worry about competing necessarily with another gas utility or whatnot. They still have to compete against, say, propane or even up here in Northeast PA, coal, or, you know, people have optionality, of course. But sometimes with those utilities, the question remains, are we getting the best service? Are there ways to introduce new competition? Are there ways to reevaluate that? And also at the same time, too, we have to understand that they are hit with the same workforce issues. They're hit with the same supply chain issues, regulatory issues, et cetera. So maybe we need to reevaluate the costs that government is artificially creating and that the utilities have to respond to. So I think there are a lot of things that have to be done. I don't think it's easy for – I don't think it's there's a solution just for somebody like Gavin Newsom or Jared Polis out there in Colorado just to point at utilities and say, you're being greedy, you're price gouging these people. I think there's a bigger issue. It's an issue compounded by many different variables. But the one thing that we can all agree on is – more oil and natural gas production domestically, more infrastructure to get that energy to the people that need it will help resolve these problems. And DC, if I recall, you currently rely on fuel oil. Do you even have natural gas availability in your neighborhood, or is it just not even an option for you?
It's not an option. They never ran the lines. I guess the neighbors never got together and said, hey, let's get natural gas installed. So yeah, it's either oil or else I run electric space heaters.
Yeah. So, that's just another example. Like, how many people are like you in the Valley even? And you would assume that the Wilkes-Barre Scranton market all the way down to Hazleton, et cetera, everyone would have natural gas and they don't. So what are we doing to connect more people? Natural gas on a dollar for dollar basis, once it's established, built out and everyone's using it, is typically the lowest cost option for heating your home in the winter. And why aren't we trying to push more of that? Instead, you see other states like was in New York and California. They're trying to push and ban any new hookups. They're trying to push and ban any new appliances from using the products. Well, what do you think that's ultimately going to do? It's going to cause the utility companies probably to charge more and more. And the supply of the product getting to those who can actually access it will continue to be, you know, limited, which ultimately will lead to price increases as well. So it's not really a solution to the problem unless your solution is making everybody switch over to green energy, electricity, et cetera. And that's just a bigger issue to be had. So again, the solution here is through expanding the energy industry, working with utility companies, working with the producers, figuring out what the hurdles are, the cost constraints that we can control, and then making sure that those savings are passed on to consumers. And hopefully we'll see that in our lifetimes, DC.
Right. Yeah, that would be very nice to see.
Oil and gas industry could slash methane emissions by 75% with barely a hit to income, says IEA. The energy industry is not making sufficient efforts to reduce its methane emissions, according to a new report from the International Energy Agency. Carbon dioxide is the largest contributor to global warming, but while CO2 is 200 times more present in the atmosphere than methane and lasts a lot longer, methane's warming effects are around 85 times stronger, and it's contributed 30% to the rise in global temperature since the Industrial Revolution. The energy sector is the second largest source of human-caused methane, behind only agriculture, which was responsible for 40% of human-created methane in 2022. I like how they emphasize human-created methane, too, because I forget the gentleman, he joined our show a couple of times to discuss it, but when you factor in volcanoes and swamps and termites and cow farts and things like that, there's a lot of methane produced. And then the question becomes like, even if we reduced and eliminated all the human created methane, is that enough to stop global warming or climate change? Or is the Earth going to continue to do it? Will it slow down? Who knows? This story reminds me of one I was reading late last night. You know, when you get off the plane, DC, from traveling all day or just driving all day, you get to your hotel room or your house and you sit down and you're so exhausted, but you're so exhausted you can't sleep.
Yeah.
So then you stay up for 2 more hours.
Right.
Yeah, that was me last night. And I found a story. Have you heard about Chat GPT yet?
Yes.
The AI bot that you can talk to?
Yes, of course.
I've been using it. I love the thing. But I guess somebody started talking to ChatGPT about climate change.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, while it returned the normal stuff talking about how climate change is bad and we need to reduce our emissions. And again, I'm not arguing that one way or another. I think cleaning up our air and our waterways and our environment is a positive. But I just believe we can do it simultaneously while still utilizing fossil fuels like natural gas and oil that are produced responsibly. But I know I'm off on a tangent. Let me finish the tangent real quick. It was interesting because even ChatGPT, after talking about all of the research and how it's commonly accepted that climate change is real, ChatGPT acknowledged that, you know, even over the last couple of years, though, there seems to have been a slowdown in the warming of the Earth.
Oh, wow.
And that was interesting, again, because people are pushing it and politicians especially push it as the most troubling and most important issue of our time. And I think they use it more as a rallying call to get what they want done. But what's interesting is at the same time that even if it's slowed down or paused or whatever the case may be, we're using more fossil fuels today than we were yesterday and last year and the year before and all those times. So it does call in the question, if we can produce more of this resource responsibly and manage it and simultaneously see a reduction to climate change emissions and or you know, threats to the environment, it leads me to believe that they can coexist and we can enjoy them versus having to eliminate them completely. I know it was a long-winded tangent, but it was interesting that this AI bot that's supposed to be considered what the leading AI artificial intelligence program out there was even suggesting that, you know, the data and whatnot suggests that there might be a pause or a slowdown or something like that. I'll see if I can find the article later or next week even.
I'm quite surprised to hear that because a lot of what I've been hearing about ChatGPT and things of that nature is that let's just say they lean politically or sociopolitically a little too in one particular direction. You take a guess as to, you know, with big tech behind it, you take a guess which way it is. So I'm surprised to hear that it actually says, oh, no, it could be slowing down a little bit. So that's interesting.
Could be slowing down. Let's see. I found the article here. Fox News. It says ChatGPT alters response. Nope, that's the wrong one. I'll see if I can find it. Oh, here you go. ChatGPT confesses global warming. Not much since 2016. Again, Fox News story reporting this. But ChatGPT was responding to Steve Malloy, Junk Science founder, who pushed a lengthy exchange with ChatGPT and published it all. He asked a simple question, is CO2 warming a hoax? ChatGPT responds, no, it's widely accepted that the scientific facts show that it is actively happening and that human activity has fueled some of that change. But down here, ChatGPT acknowledges that the NOAA's data shows there hasn't been a warming since 2015, and it insists that that global temperatures have not exceeded the 2016 record highs. So that's what I'm getting at is, and that's probably what the data does suggest. Now, of course, people will jump at that and say it's cyclical and there's cycles of warming and cooling and all that. And I do believe that the Earth does go through cycles, and how much of that is either exaggerated for the purposes of political gain or business gain. But I just thought it was interesting that this device, as you were saying, was even recognizing that, hey, you know, maybe it's not happening every year at the rate that everybody says it's happening at.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
so,
all right.
Yeah, yeah, it just came out February 24th, 5 a.m. Oh, I guess I was up really late now that I'm seeing it. 5 a.m., 24th of February, ChatGPT confession, global warming, not much since 2016. That's the article. Check it out yourself. Again, I'm just sharing the news here. We're not taking really a position on it. And maybe it'll help inform your decision. But I will say I do enjoy using that program, and I'm looking forward to seeing what other types of programs like that come out in the future. Let's see here. Column on oil and gas mini slump, all part of the cycle. And as you know, we have ups and downs in the oil and gas industry, and this is no different. Oil and gas prices are in another mini slump nearly 3 years after they hit, were hit by the first wave of COVID in North America and Western Europe. But the latest downturn is part of a cycle in manufacturing activity and energy prices that has repeated with an average duration of every 3 to 4 years since the early 90s. After adjusting for core consumer prices, the price of Brent crude is falling 30% from its peak last year, and U.S. natural gas prices are down about 70% from their peak last August. In real terms, this is, again, just part of the cycle. They go up, they go down, they go up, they go down. And the energy industry, and we're in the earnings season now, so companies are reporting on their fourth quarter and year-end results, and then they're given their guidance for what 2023 year looks like. And different companies have different takes, but the consensus typically at this point in time, when we start to see that price pull back and that change, companies start addressing that by changing their plans. Maybe they're not going to run as many drilling rigs or as many frac crews or bring as many wells online. So it's all about kind of balancing it, because the energy industry right now, as we've discussed, is really focused on giving back to the shareholders through dividends, through share repurchasing. Some companies are even offering special dividends at the end of the year when there's additional cash flow because they understand the ups and downs of the commodity cycle. I think the other thing that's interesting that'll be different than in years past, it appears that companies are not as overstretched or burdened with debt. There weren't as many mergers and acquisitions. There weren't as many new plays, new discoveries. Some of that had to do with supply chain. Some of that had to do with inflation. Some of it really just had to do with the oil and gas industry spending the better part of the early 2010s struggling through bad cycles, if you will, and bad decisions. So I think the energy industry overall is in a much better position financially. So even if there is a cycle, a mini cycle or a prolonged cycle of an up and a down, I think the energy industry will be in a better spot. And I think it will help us as a country and our economy through that cycle much quicker. Obviously, we'll spend the better part of 2023 watching that. If it's short term, is it 6 months? Is it a year? Is it 2 years? Who knows? And nobody can predict those things. But it's not extraordinary to see the ups and the downs. Freeport gains federal approval for a restart, but not before natural gas futures fall further. Fresh off a week of mostly steady declines, as we just discussed, natural gas futures extended their losses, which is interesting because Friday's close was around $2. Henry Hub price to a little over $2. And this story is referencing Freeport LNG issued or has been constrained because of issues last year. There was a fire and explosion that occurred there, and it knocked off Freeport's ability to produce LNG and export it worldwide. The need for LNG around the world continues to grow. And of course, the international markets are usually paying more for that LNG, so companies really like to move the product over there because it commands a higher price. But now as LNG prices are falling here, they're also going to fall worldwide. So the question remains, will Freeport or, you know, LNG capacity remain at the high? And I think we closed out the year at an all-time high. Will we keep that up? I think, again, just as my personal opinion, I think yes. I think the world's needs for LNG, especially with what's going on in Russia and other places, are going to continue to push countries like the United States and Qatar to produce as much LNG as they possibly can to get it to the worldwide market while also meeting our domestic needs. And I think this country needs to invest more in LNG export capacity because those facilities take so long to build. The permitting is very arduous and takes a long time. And then, of course, the financing of those entities as well is difficult. So it takes a long lead time. So if we stop or pause the development of those things, we won't be ready the next time the need is there, whether it's a environmental need, whether it's a geopolitical need, an economic need. We need to invest in this stuff. We need to have a better energy policy plan for things like LNG than we currently have. Republicans to the SEC chair, hand over climate rules records now. Congressional Republicans want SEC Chair Gary Gensler to answer questions about the agency's efforts to write new regulations that would force companies to disclose climate-related information. We are deeply concerned with the SEC's lack of transparency and disregard for legitimate congressional oversight inquiries and call on you to be more responsive to these information requests going forward. The House Committee on Financial Services and Senator Tim Scott of the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing and Urban Affairs demands of the SEC. The lawmakers want the SEC to provide these answers by March 8th on a range of questions about the climate disclosure rule, which was proposed nearly a year ago and would require companies to provide detailed information about their climate risk exposure, greenhouse gas emissions, and more. We'll see how it goes. But to me, again, the proof is in the pudding. The country from the oil and gas sector is already driving change. It's already implementing new techniques, new technologies. Companies are highlighting how they've reduced flaring or eliminated flaring. They've changed over valves from bleeding valves to non-bleeding valves. They implemented programs either manually or through drone technology that go out and scan the sites. And if they find any leak, even if it's a small, teeny tiny leak, they address it expeditiously, right? So these are things that we weren't doing 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago as an oil and gas industry, but we are now. And we're seeing the results as not only companies are reducing their emissions output, but the country itself is seeing emissions output declines as well. So the question remains, why are we as an industry being forced to do more of this kind of bureaucracy stuff for DC? What's the ultimate goal? If it was the other way and emissions and stuff were off the charts and there was a lot more issues environmentally, locally, whatever it is, these things would kind of make sense. But I think the industry has said in organizations like the MSC here locally, API globally, and IPAA are all kind of pushing back to say, we already have the regulations on the books. Let us kind of fulfill what we're already doing. You already have multiple agencies coming after us. We don't need another agency like the SEC, which really isn't even tasked with environmental benefit or change, going after the oil and gas industry as well. Because again, the concerns have been and will be that the SEC or other agencies, especially the obscure ones, push and try to control the oil and gas industry, the banking industry, the financial industry, and eventually the capital and or investments dry up and then new infrastructure isn't funded. And when new infrastructure isn't funded, we find ourselves in situations like California and Colorado and Ukraine and Europe where we don't have the infrastructure that we need to meet our needs. And that's just not where we want to be. But a place we do want to be, of course, is with Rusty Fender. Fender, what do you got for us this week on Fender's Fast Facts?
Phil and DC on Monday, we'll change the topic here to sports for one time. Not that I'm a sports fan, but very interesting. Back in 1963, on February 27th, Mickey Mantle, and we certainly all know who Mickey Mantle is and was with the New York Yankees, signed the biggest contract in baseball history. 1963, that whopping salary of $100,000. You know, for this funny. People these days make $100,000 an hour. So we thought we'd look back at some of the biggest salaries in baseball.
Okay.
Alex Rodriguez, 10 years, $252 million.
Whew.
DC, that's almost as much as you make with your overtime.
Almost.
Before taxes. Manny Machado of the Padres, $300 million.
Wow.
And why go to college, as I tell people every day? As a college graduate, I say, why go to college? Garrett Cole with the Yankees, number 7. 5 years, $324 million. $324 million. Wow. Giancarlo Stanton of the of the Marlins, 13 years, $325 million. Bryce Harper of the Philadelphia Phillies, $330 million.
Okay.
Fernando Tatis Jr., this is one of the leaders, $340 million. He is 22 years of age. $340 million in cash.
Wow.
Francisco Lindor of the New York Mets, a contract of $341 million. And the all-time winner, Mike Trout of the California Angels, actually the Anaheim Angels, a 10-year contract worth $360 million. $360 million, DC.
Wow.
That is unbelievable. I couldn't spend that in 100 lifetimes.
No.
So being that that is just baseball alone, which is a lot of dates. Baseball plays a lot of days a year.
Yeah.
What is the highest paying sport on the average per athlete? The longest and the highest paying sport, professional sport.
I almost want to go down the road of something you wouldn't expect, like some soccer player in Spain.
I would have said the same thing, like water polo, you know. No, it's a mainstream sport and they play a lot. Yeah.
All right. I'm going with baseball.
I would have said baseball too, because we know it's not football. They only have like a month or two to play. Believe it or not, it's basketball.
Wow.
Never would have known that. Soccer combined with cricket, which is kind of basically the same vernacular there.
Yeah.
That's number two, is soccer or cricket. But basketball, per player, per year, per game, because again, they play, right up until March Madness, that part about I know, is the highest paying professional sport per day, per week, per athlete. Basketball, DC. And those are some fun facts about some whopping salaries this week.
How about that? Thank you, Rusty. Yeah, I come up with a new sport. And your little verbal slip up there gave me a name for it. It's going to be socket. soccer and cricket together. Socket. And I don't know what it's going to consist of or what the ball is going to look like. But we're gonna beat those basketball folks in salaries. All right.
Regardless of what it is.
it's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Please stay here for more.
You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan. We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, The 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender. I'm DC Taylor. Got a replay of a few news stories we did for you a couple of weeks ago. Here's Bill.
U.S. oil sector seeks flexibility on methane rules. Constantly being attacked for methane emissions, and the oil and gas industry is constantly fighting this administration, President Joe Biden's administration. They are seeking compromises. The latest article here discusses that large oil and gas facilities will begin paying $900 for each metric ton of methane emitted above a minimum emission intensity under parts of the Inflation Reduction Act that will start to impose the penalty on leaks of greenhouse gas emissions. The fees will be $1,200 per ton in 2025, then $1,500 in all subsequent years. But it will fall to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to figure out exactly how to collect the waste emission charge through regulations aimed at the regulations are supposed to be proposed by March. Oil industry officials ahead of that have raised questions of how the charge will work. They're asking for changes such as not imposing a charge on methane that escapes through unburned flares. Oil industry officials say the EPA needs to provide clear guidance on how to calculate these emission thresholds, including any potential calculations on converting volume to weight, because they say ambiguity could be grounds for potential fines and audits by federal officials. It's frustrating. You know, these kinds of efforts are, I don't think they're as helpful as they set out to be, or at least they're sold to the public. The oil and gas industry is doing a phenomenal job across the board. And I'm not saying there are bad eggs or bad players, but all in all, the oil and gas industry is leading in terms of emissions reductions. We are in the business of capturing these products and getting them to market, not just letting them vent up into the air or disappear. So as a country, we have seen exponential growth of oil and natural gas products, and we've seen almost an equally impressive reduction of greenhouse gas emissions intensities. So the fact remains that now that we have to pay even more as an industry, there's just so much ambiguity, and it's probably one of the biggest criticisms of the EPA and other federal agencies engaged in this act, is that the ambiguity allows for them to take advantage of the system, whether it's in fining or collecting fines, or, you know, downright even harassing the industry as it's trying to develop responsibly. And that kind of negative interaction sometimes stifles innovation, as companies are trying their best to not get fined or keep up with the ever changing, or what do they call it? The goal line when the goal line moves on you,
moving the goalposts. Yeah,
there you go. Moving the goalposts on you. The industry is constantly having to deal with that, and it can lead to negative innovation instead of just working with the energy industry. Again, as I talk about this olive branch, work together. Let's highlight the successes. Let's double down on those successes. Let's expand them. Let's make them the industry standards. But again, I really think this just comes down to a new way to tax without calling it a tax, right? You and I and the American voters don't want to get taxed anymore. So what do politicians do on both sides of the aisle? They figure out ways to, you know, impose fees and taxes on the products that you and I want to consume. At the end of the day, who pays for this? While the oil and gas industry would be the ones writing the check, you and I, DC, will pay for this.
Right.
And I just don't see how it's going to – it's not going to result in as much of a, or if any, net positive environmental impact. So in a time where, as we just talked about before, it's so expensive to even go to the grocery store, I don't think we should be adding more taxes onto things we need, like energy.
Exactly.
Clear energy spending beats fossil fuels for the first time. For the first time ever, the world investors poured as much money into low carbon energy products as they did
into fossil fuel ones last year, but still fell short on what is necessary to reach climate goals. The chief conclusion in the report Thursday from the market analyst firm Bloomberg NEF found global annual spending on a range of low-carbon technologies, including renewables, heat pumps, electric vehicles, hydrogen, nuclear power, and carbon capture, crossed the $1 trillion mark in 2022 for the first time. The analysts considered project investments such as financing for battery storage, wind farms, other technologies, and they also included sales of electric cars and or heat pumps. The invested $1.1 trillion in clean energy was 31% higher than 2021, according to the analysis. Again, how much of that is government subsidies, government direct investment, pushing the industry towards that? And then we also started at the top of the show, DC, discussing how places like Germany, which have been leading the world in this conversion over to renewable energy, are turning back on coal plants because it won't meet their demands. Imagine if we just put a fraction of that $1 trillion back into infrastructure and then a fraction of that $1 trillion into efficiency projects, what our end result will be. And I bet, and I'm willing to say that it would be equally as impressive in terms of environmental benefit if we just made those key investments.
House Republicans release a flurry of bills to loosen oil and gas mining regulations. House Republicans are pushing several bills to reduce regulations on oil and gas. Of course, we are pro-reducing regulations, especially those onerous ones or over-the-top ones. We're not opposed to regulations, but it's got to be common sense, right?
Right, of course.
So now that they control the House, they're in a much stronger position to do this, not only for the oil and gas and energy industries, but also the mining industries and just general business as well. Uncertainty breeds in action. Our friend Jeff Eshelman over at the IPAA, which stands for Independent Petroleum Association of America, says in support of loosening these bills on oil and gas, we have lawsuits, new permitting regulations, climate disclosures from the Security Exchange Commission, electrification proposals for stoves, which have gotten so much attention, which create delays. Lease sales have been stalled. Oil and gas development on federal lands have been stalled. And what does it result for us? Higher energy costs.
Right.
I just got one of my bills for electric. So I have electric and natural gas to my house, right? So electric, obviously, natural gas for heat and the stove. And compared to last year, I'm almost up like 150%. And I'm sure you're seeing similar costs.
Yeah. I still can't get over my my oil tank fill up back in October. I've stretched it this far.
I was going to say, are you still going with what's in there?
I'm stretching it by, you know, keeping it at like 59, 60 degrees in my house and putting on a winter coat. And it was almost $1,100 to fill the thing back in October. So, you know.
Crazy. Well, luckily we have a reprieve, some warmer weather after, last weekend we dipped back into the negative or almost negatives.
Yeah, it was like zero last Saturday.
So you had to turn the heat on then?
Yeah, I did. I did turn it all the way up to 61 that morning.
And I wore two coats, right? Yeah. Craziness. I try to explain to my colleagues across the country what it's like up here. They're all amazed when we dip into the negatives.
Yeah.
And they're like, how does it even go negative? And then I explain to them, me personally, while it's cold, the cold doesn't bother me as much as the wind chill does.
Sure.
Yeah. Trying to explain that to them. Yeah. It's one thing to be standing outside in 5 degrees. It's another thing to be standing outside in 5 degrees with a negative wind chill of 20.
Right.
That just hits you.
Yeah,
you
got 20, 25 mile an hour
wind,
gusty winds.
Your face gets all, like windburned and like your bones start to ache and all sorts.
I live in a place where the air hurts my face.
Craziness. Yeah. Well, another thing that hurts our face on this program, President Joe Biden and the State of the Union. Oh, yeah. I don't know if people caught it. I personally didn't. I had some other things going on. I think I was actually at a work dinner, and just ended up skipping it this year. But I've been seeing a lot of criticisms of the speech, especially from the energy industry. Yeah. But CNBC is reporting that the president appeals to Republicans to work together on the debt ceiling as well as other issues. Biden unintentionally drew for a few seconds laughter from Republicans in the middle of his speech by predicting that the United States would remain dependent on petroleum for only another decade. And to some, Biden's prediction was optimistic at best and a bit of an understatement. The United States currently consumes approximately a fifth of all of the petroleum used around the world every day. And Biden's own U.S. government data projections for the American public is that American petroleum consumption will increase nearly every year for the next three decades, not decrease.
Right.
And that doesn't count natural gas. It probably doesn't even take into account other derivative products. I mean, on this show, we like to promote how ammonia, which is used as a main feedstock for fertilizer to grow our food every day, is derived from natural gas and other petroleum products, right? Yeah. So, like, I don't see how we can replace those things even with solar and wind panels. So, another story on the same topic, NGI reported that we're going to need oil at least another decade. President Biden continues to champion his zero carbon emissions future and on Tuesday acknowledged that the United States would need it for a little bit longer. However, his silence on exploration and production permitting reform was deafening for some politicos and industry groups. The comments were not part of the prepared remarks in the State of the Union address to Congress. The president did not back down from his climate change crisis, though he blamed it for increasing the global environmental disasters. And he said oil and gas producers were not doing enough, despite the fact that the industry continues to lower emissions, become more efficient, invest in the areas that they operate, improve the environments that they operate in, and even improve the communities that they operate in. And the president acknowledged that some industry executives are worried about making big investments into U.S. fossil fuel production. And I think that has more to do with the first story at the top of the show about too much regulations and uncertainty. I think the energy industry is willing to make the investments. Mm-hmm. They just want to do it in such a way that the government of the United States is proactive and works with them, not vilifies them along the way. And during the speech, of course, President Biden attacked the energy industry for making $200 billion in profits, record profits across the globe during this energy crisis. Again, some of this energy crisis is a result of these regulations and decisions. Some of it has to do with COVID. Some of it has to do with inflation, supply chain stuff. And, of course, the war in Europe. But at the end of the day, we, the United States, have the ability to fix that in a couple of ways. The pain that you and I feel as consumers of energy every day does not have to be this way.
Right.
The market adapts, and it will continue to adapt. And we are a, we should be proud of this, an economy driven by capitalism. Capitalism leads to innovation, leads to investments, leads to so many positive things. So we shouldn't attack that.
Right.
We should work hand in hand with it.
There you go. A couple more news stories here on the shale gas news that we presented to you a couple weeks ago. All still relevant and all great stuff to keep in mind. Great info. And thank you to Bill DeRozier for those stories. And I'm DC Taylor. Coming up next on the shale gas news will be the top five stories of the week from MarcellusDrilling.com. We'll also see what kind of careers are out there. The job segment on the way. It's the Shale Gas News. Thanks for listening. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up the job segment in just a couple of minutes, we'll see what kind of careers you could potentially be a part of in the energy industry. But first, we'll go to the top five stories. It's each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month. So we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles the list, the top stories each week. So MarcellusDrilling.com is where you can find these stories and the top five most read stories on MDN over the past week. Coming in at number five last week, another big dip in NYMEX gas price. Biggest monthly drop in 22 years. We keep commenting on the futures price of natural gas, the NYMEX Henry Hub price, because it keeps heading lower. Just a few days ago, the NYMEX price closed down another 22 cents to $2.40 per million BTU, the lowest settlement price since April 6th, 2021, 22 months ago. Here's another somber statistic. The NYMEX price fell the most during a single month in January than it has fallen in 22 years. The NYMEX price fell a whopping 40%. In January. Rusty?
Number four, DC, a tanker with Marcellus liquid natural gas from Cove Point breaks down in the Suez Canal. The Grace Amelia is an LNG tanker 975 feet long and 151 feet wide, built and commissioned in 2021. According to Vessel Finder, the Grace Amelia sails between the point of Dabhol in India and Cove Point in Maryland. India buys roughly half of the LNG produced at Cove Point, built by Dominion Energy, now operated by Berkshire Hathaway, while Japan buys the other half. As the Grace Amelia was transiting through the Suez Canal, it experienced a malfunction with its rudder. Some reports say the ship ran aground and tugs were used to float it again. Other reports from the Associated Press don't mention the ship running aground. We're not exactly sure if it did or did not, but tugboats pulled the ship to the side of the canal to allow other vessels to pass, and traffic was not obstructed. The Associated Press says canal tugs were reported towing the Grace Amelia to Little Bitter Lake to repair the malfunction. It's an interesting story, DC.
Oh, okay. The third most popular story over the past week at MarcellusDrilling.com. Spot price for natural gas in New England trades as high as $225 per million BTUs. Here in the northeastern part of the country, we are supposed to be getting clobbered by 2 days of super cold Siberian air. This was a couple with last week. The otherworldly temperatures are forecast to be in the minus 45 degree Fahrenheit region in some places. Wind chill temperatures even lower. The spot physically delivered next day price for natural gas in some locations in New England traded as high as $225 per multi-million BTU during the day a couple of weeks ago, one day when it got really cold. Even so, the national benchmark Henry Hub price in southern Louisiana sank another 1.2 cents to settle at $2.46 per multi-million BTU. The The price spiked in New England because there is a lack of pipelines to the region, intentionally so, because New England politicians and the people who elect them don't want more filthy fossil fuels flowing to their region. Yet they consume those filthy fossil fuels like crazy when it gets cold, setting off a competition. Whoever pays the most wins. Of course, nat gas customers lose because they pay nosebleed prices when this happens. But it's their own fault, and we stopped feeling sorry for New England and New York City long ago. Where are New England's precious, quote, renewables now? Why can't renewables like offshore wind and onshore solar ride in to save the day? Because renewables on their own don't work. That's why. Rusty?
Number two. FERC approves Freeport LNG request to reintro feed gas to the first train. Now, on Tuesday, Freeport LNG has been out of operation since an explosion and fire in June of 2021, asked the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is FERC, for permission to begin introducing feed gas back into one of three liquefaction trains, which are units at the factory. Now, last week, FERC responded by granting permission. What's obvious is that this is going to be a lengthy baby step-by-baby step process. Freeport, located along the Gulf Coast near the Texas-Louisiana border, will have to seek and receive permission pretty much every small step of the way. We remain interested in Freeport's return to service because at least some of the molecules that feed the facility come from the Marcellus-Utica region, D.C.
All right, here we go. The number one most popular story on MDN over the past week. Diversified's next LVL energy. I guess that's pronounced level. we've been eliminating what do they call vowels out of words lately. Diversified's Next Level Energy moves headquarters from Pennsylvania to West Virginia. 1 year ago, Diversified Energy, formerly Diversified Gas and Oil, announced it had purchased Next Level Energy, a well-plugging company that concentrates on plugging mainly old conventional oil and gas wells in Appalachia. Next Level was founded by oil and gas industry veterans Brad Maddox, Clay Cochran, and Keith Coleman in 2020 and headquartered in the Pittsburgh region. A couple Fridays ago, Diversified CEO Rusty Hutson Jr. was joined by West Virginia Governor Jim Justice at a ribbon-cutting ceremony for a brand new headquarters for Next Level in Bridgeport, West Virginia. Yes, the Next Level subsidiary is moving its headquarters from Pittsburgh, roughly 2 hours south, to Bridgeport in Harrison County, West Virginia. The official stated reason for the move is the new headquarters enables efficient deployment of equipment and provides industry-leading training for staff development. Diversified owns close to 8 million acres of leases with some 67,000 mostly conventional oil and gas wells. Most of Diversified's assets are located in the Appalachian region. Next Level now operates 15 rigs used for plugging, up 70% from a year ago. Next Level employs roughly 100 people. There you go. The top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the latest Marcellus and Utica news each day, it's easy. Just subscribe to Marcellus Drilling News. Go to marcellusdrilling.com and click on the subscribe link. It's only $7.95 a month or $79.50 if you pay for the whole year. marcellusdrilling.com. Now time for the job segment, looking into careers in the energy industries, brought to us by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
And thank you, DC. And in Pennsylvania, New Pig Energy, looking for a field technician for their oil and gas containment units out of Tyrone. WC Welding, an opening for a roustabout and compressor operates out of Montrose. Ironback Energy Services, roustabout hands, kind of like all hands on deck. 10 openings out of Cannonsburg near Pittsburgh. CUDD, C-U-D-D. CUDD Energy Services, looking for a pressure control assistant. It's out of Williamsport. Range Resources, an opening for a meter technician, level one. It's out of Washington, Pennsylvania, also in the Pittsburgh area. Penn Hills Resources, an opening for a well tender out of Kane, NAES Corporation. They just posted an operations and maintenance technician for their liquefied natural gas unit. It's out of Towanda. Front Energy Services, a restoration foreman out of Washington, Pennsylvania, and Stantec, a water resources engineer out of Pittsburgh. In Ohio, Advanced Oil Field Services, an opening for a roustabout foreman out of Mineral City. Universal Wellhead Services, an opening for a field service technician based in New Comerstown. Exacta Land Surveyors posted a land survey instrument operator that'll be based in Worthington. Frontier Environmental Services, looking for a welder's helper. It's out of St. Clairsville. TC Energy, a construction technician based in Sugar Grove. Bechtel, an opening for a supervisor and a superintendent for piping. It's out of Wellsville. And Montauk Energy, a well field technician opening based in Amsterdam. In West Virginia, Cayman Energy, looking for an instrumentation and electrical technician out of Proctor. Century Contractors, an opening for a combination pipe welder. It's out of Inwood. Energy, Land, and Mineral, got an opening for an oil and gas manifold technician and two openings for spotters. That's out of West Union. TransCanada posted an automation and electrical mechanic out of Matthias. Greylock Energy, a well tender out of Madison. And Apex Energy looking for five roustabouts for Wheeling, West Virginia. And in New York, General Oil Equipment, a welder and fabricator out of Amherst. That's in the Buffalo, Niagara Falls area. AGI Construction, a construction superintendent based in the capital of Albany. New York Power Authority, a temporary assistant gas scheduler out of White Plains. That's Westchester County. Douglas Pipeline Company, a pipeline technician out of Jamestown. And Repsol, looking for an automation specialist based in Horseheads, the Binghamton, Elmira, New York area. And those are the jobs this week, as DC mentioned, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Thanks for finding your future here in natural gas, the Shale Gas News, and we thank you for listening on our network of stations. We'll see you next week, same time, same radio stations. For Bill DeRosia, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks once again for listening to the Shale Gas News.